Good afternoon, everyone. Today, I want to talk about change. And specifically, how quickly change happens. Just a week ago, the oldest known living person passed away at the age of 116 years old. This person was an Italian lady named Emma Morano. Here's a photo of her taken just before she passed away. At 116 years old, this means that she was born in the 1800s, and there was no one else on this planet still living who can say that. Emma lived through the First and Second World Wars, so got to experience the world, go through major changes at least twice, and then continue to change into the world we know today. She was born not long after the invention of the light bulb, and definitely before the invention of the electric toaster, the refrigerator, even the cell phone, and these are all things that we take for granted today. Everyone here probably understands that 116 years is a long time and a lot can happen in that time. But I hope to impress upon you that drastic changes can happen in a much smaller amount of time. The title of this message is The Next Generation, and as I discuss generations, I'm going to use the commonly accepted age of a generation, which is about 20 years. But before we start talking about today's generation, let's go to the other end of the spectrum, and just for fun, let's consider Adam, the first man who lived to the age of 930 years. He was like many of the other patriarchs spoken in the Bible, who lived well over 900 years. And if someone like Adam were alive today, and he were having his 900th birthday, he would have been born in the year 1116. So Adam could have told us firsthand about Genghis Khan building his empire in the 1200s, Christopher Columbus discovering the New World in 1492, Michelangelo painting the Sistine Chapel in the 1500s, and if Adam learned to speak English, he could have chatted with Shakespeare, Galileo, and Isaac Newton. And now that I think about it, maybe they didn't all speak English. I should have checked that out. He could have been present at the signing of the Declaration of Independence in 1776. He could have seen America become a nation and eventually turn into the nation it's become today. So this 900-year-old could possibly give us a more complete and expansive history than written in any one of our modern textbooks. He could tell us about the changes he has seen and share his wisdom on where we should go in the future. And we'd probably think, you know, this guy has seen a lot of stuff in his day. He probably knows what he's talking about. And although we don't have a 900-year-old to give us advice, we do have a few folks here that have a few years under their belt. And, you know, we may look up to them and say, you know, they have a lot of experience. I should probably hear what they have to say. But my point is, you don't have to live 900 years to notice that the world is changing quickly around you. Most of you can think of several ways that the world you grew up in is a lot different than today. You know, on Facebook, I see people recognize this a lot, and they'll post nostalgic photos like this one that I'm about to show you, and they'll ask, are you old enough to remember this? This is a cassette and a pencil, and yeah, I do remember this. This is an example from my own lifetime. So what's the connection between the two? This is easy for anyone who has used audio cassettes, which were very popular up until about 20 years ago. That's, again, one generation ago when CDs took their place, and we've even got things that have taken the place of CDs. And for those who don't know, the players for these cassettes, you know, we call them tape players, they were often big and blocky by today's standards. They had a lot of moving parts. And as the cassette players got old, they had a tendency to yank the tape out and make a mess, and also as the cassettes got old, they sometimes would get stuck and the reels wouldn't spin, so you'd have to pull out your trusty pencil, stick it in the hole, and get the tape moving again. But when I showed this to my kids, they had no idea what the connection was, you know? And this is one demonstration in how in just 20 years something can be lost on the next generation. You know, today a majority of us stream our music from the internet or have little MP3 players or even use our cell phones. And here's something a little more recent than that and a little more serious. This is a photo of the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center in New York before September 11th, 2001. And that's a date that most of us will never forget, even though it was over almost 15 years ago. In September, it'll be 15 years. And think about this. Anyone under the age of 20 may have a hard time remembering details from that day. Those who are 15 or younger have always lived in the aftermath. You know, they weren't glued to the television or the radio like many of us were, watching the news as it unfolded. So how do we make sure that those in the next generation don't forget? Well, we pass on the knowledge and tell our stories from that day. We share stories from others. We show them pictures and videos and try to help them understand what that day meant for the history of our nation. This is the same thing I would do if I wanted, for example, to learn about the attack on Pearl Harbor. You know, that was a similarly devastating attack. I would read books or ask my grandparents if they remember what it was like to get the news about that. You know, maybe they're too young to remember, but next time we go over there, I'd like to ask them. But I wasn't alive, so I cannot truly know how it felt to be there. So some of that is lost on me. I often think back to things I really enjoyed as a child. And as a parent, I want to share those things with my children from my childhood and hope that they like something as much as I did. You know, and Hollywood plays on this every time they release another, say, Star Wars or Indiana Jones movie. They aren't just targeting the kids or the current generation. They're targeting their parents who are watching the original movies for the first time 30 or 40 years ago. And yeah, the original Star Wars is coming up on its 40th anniversary. Think about that. And they know those parents will show up, if nothing else, than for the sake of nostalgia. So I believe we all have a desire here to pass something on to the future generations. And when it comes to pop culture, I doubt any of us are going to have trouble with that. Social media like Facebook and YouTube will make sure that everything pop culture related is archived so we can share it with each other and think back to a better time. But when it comes to the truth of the Bible, so much could be easily lost if we aren't careful to pass it on to the generation after us. You know, the Bible will never go away, and I believe there will always be a remnant of people carrying the truth of the word and sharing it with the world, regardless of how small that remnant is. But, you know, our hope should be for us and the next generation to carry it on to the world and be beacons of light. In some ways, technology has made it easier for us to do this. You know, we can archive our teachings and save it for future generations, for example, in the form of video or audio or electronic books. But the problem is, in general, there's a lot of noise to sort through, a lot of noise for the following generations to sort through, especially if you rely on the internet to study the truth. You know, there's a very small percentage of biblical truth compared to everything else that's available on the internet. So we can't rely exclusively on technology to teach our youth. It has to start with us interacting and teaching in our family units and then with us collectively here in the congregation. We need to prepare the future generation so they can prepare the following generation, and so on. And the Bible has a lot to say about making sure that we pass the truth on from one generation to the next. So we're going to start looking at this by turning first to Deuteronomy 4. And I do have it on the slide here. Deuteronomy 4 and verse 9. Only take heed to thyself and keep thy soul diligently, lest you forget the things your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from thy heart all the days of thy life. But teach them thy sons and thy sons' sons, especially the day that thou stoodest before Yahweh thy Elohim in Horeb, when Yahweh said to me, gather me the people together, and I will make them hear my words, that they may learn to fear me all the days that they shall live upon the earth, and that they may teach their children. So Israel was told here to pass these teachings on to their children, basically so they wouldn't forget them and mess up. And what's important to understand is what led up to this passage. If you read from the beginning of the chapter, Yahweh's reminding the Israelites about the time that they got mixed up with false worship and started intermingling with the Moabites and worshiping their false gods. And the ones that did this received a plague, and they died. And then Yahweh says, those who stayed true to me, you all are still alive today. And all of this happened within the 40 years, or by today's standards, two generations that they were in the wilderness. And you may recall all the other horrible things the Israelites did while they were in the wilderness, you know, like making the golden calf, for example. Again, all of these things were things that happened in a relatively short period of time. Let's go back to verse 5 in the same chapter. Behold, I have taught you statutes and judgments, even as Yahweh, my Elohim, commanded me, that you should do so in the land where you go in to possess it. Keep therefore and do them, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the nations, which shall hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. So imagine if we could teach the next generation to understand Yahweh's word so well that those outside the faith could say this, that these people are wise and understanding. Like this account in Deuteronomy 4, the Bible has several examples of one generation doing the right thing while the next generation careens off course and turns to idolatry in one form or another. And I don't have time to cover them all today, but I do have a couple examples I'd like to look at. In Genesis 9, verse 1, and Elohim blessed Noah and his sons, and he said to them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. Now, Noah's family had just been saved from a worldwide flood. They had finally landed after being in the ark, you know, during a downpour of rain for 40 days, floating around in the ark for several months after that. And when they finally got off the ark, Yahweh told them what they needed to do next. He says, be fruitful, multiply across the earth. But only a few generations later, we have the people doing the exact opposite. Genesis 11, verse 4. And they said, go to, let us build a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven, and let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad among the face of the whole earth. So Nimrod, who was Noah's great-grandson, is often credited with having the Tower of Babel built. And that's because he built other cities, and Babel is listed as one of the cities in his kingdom. So instead of going out and replenishing the earth, pride overcame Noah's descendants, and they gathered together to build a tower to reach into heaven. And you all know what happened next. In verse 8, so Yahweh scattered them abroad and thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore, the name of it is called Babel, because Yahweh did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did Yahweh scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. So these people decided not to observe the command Yahweh had given to their previous generations. And so Yahweh had to force them to. You know, man had one plan, Yahweh had another. And we need to be very careful about pride creeping in to the congregation, because it doesn't take long to consume, and it doesn't take much for it to start to grow into a lot. I'd like to look at one other example from Israel's history. And you know, Israel really did have a rough history. Over and over again, they left Yahweh, and it either took a tragedy to bring them back, or it took someone with a strong desire for the truth to restore true worship. And you know, Yahweh warned them over and over in the Torah about being lured away by the other nations. Deuteronomy 12, verse 30. Take heed to thyself, that thou be not snared by following them, after that they be destroyed from before thee, and thou inquire not after their mighty ones, saying, how did these nations serve their mighty ones? Even so will I do likewise. So here in Deuteronomy 12 is a very clear warning to the Israelites. But you know what? It didn't take long for Israel to go right back into idolatry. And here's an account from 2 Kings that speaks about this. 2 Kings chapter 17, verse 13. Yet Yahweh testified against Israel and against Judah by all the prophets and by all the seers, saying, turn ye from your evil ways and keep my commandments and my statutes according to all the law which I commanded your fathers, which I set to you by my servants and prophets. This is the same thing we were just reading about in Deuteronomy. But in verse 17, notwithstanding, they would not hear, but hardened their necks, like to the neck of their fathers that did not believe in Yahweh, their Elohim. And they rejected his statutes and his covenant that he made with their fathers and his testimonies which he testified against them. And they followed vanity and became vain and went after the heathen that were round about them concerning whom Yahweh had charged them that they should not do like them. You know, don't dismiss this right away as something that could never happen to us. Here in verse 15, it says, it was vanity that led Israel to follow the ways of the heathen. And if you looked out in the world today, ask yourself, how much vanity do you see out there? Is it luring our youth or even us away from the truth? We need to remember that the root of Israel's problems could be the same root of issues that we experience today. So we need to be careful about letting vanity and pride seep in. Now, if you want to take a reading assignment home with you, I recommend that you read Nehemiah 9. This is a really encouraging passage. And it shows that even if our fathers or the previous generations did not walk in the truth, it doesn't mean we have to follow them. In this passage in Nehemiah 9, the Israelites confess their sins to Yahweh and end by saying, Yahweh, we are your servants. And we need to prepare the next generation to be servants of Yahweh. Here's a slide with a few tips to get you started. We need to teach the next generation the importance of their dedication to Yahweh and obedience to the word, leading up to baptism, so Yahweh can send his spirit to guide them. And you can read about this in Acts 5:32, how obedience is required for receiving the Holy Spirit. And they're going to need the Spirit, not just for defending their faith, but for matters in the congregation and at home. You know, we all experience situations that aren't explicitly dealt with in the Bible, where we're looking for guidance on a particular subject, say, guidance on how to observe the Sabbath, or guidance on how to work an issue out with your brother or sister. And the next generation, they're going to have similar situations to deal with, and they're going to need the Spirit to guide them. The next generation should be taught how to pray, because they're going to need to use prayer as a way to have a closer relationship to Yahweh. The next generation needs to be taught how to study so they can get closer to the word and learn how to defend it as the truth, because the world is going to tell them that they're wrong. And they're going to need to be knowledgeable, and maybe even they'll be able to convince someone of the truth and change their mind. 2 Timothy 2:15 says, study to show thyself approved, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed. The next generation should be taught humility and the importance of not only serving Yahweh, but serving others and putting them before self. Micah 6:8 says, he's shown you, O man, what is good and what Yahweh requires of you, but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy Elohim. And all these things that I said we need to teach the next generation, well, guess what? We need to learn them too. How are we going to teach anything if we don't first know about it and put it in effect in our lives? So I personally believe that we should be helping the next generation discover the truth for themselves. If they understand and can defend the basics of this faith, they will be stronger than if we just say, here's what you do, without explaining why. And one example of this very thing in the Bible was commanded to the Israelites to tell their children why they were keeping the Passover service. In Exodus 12, you can read about this. When the children asked their parents, why are we doing this Passover service? The parents were instructed, you know, tell them about the Passover lamb and that night when the angel of death, or that Yahweh passed over their houses and spared the firstborn's life. So the children would know exactly why they were doing that Passover service. For those parents here, there will be a day when your children will be on their own and they will question why they're doing something. And just because mom and dad told me to will not be enough for them. They will need to be able to prove these truths on their own. I know because I did that, and I've seen others do the same thing. So if we can, we should explain the whys along with the what's. So as I wrap this up, I'd like to reiterate that a lot can change in one generation. All it takes is for the previous generation, on the whole, to be a little less interested in the faith and to be pulled a little from the truth. And then the following generation could be pulled a little further until the whole congregation is weakened to the point where their worship doesn't even resemble apostolic worship. On the other hand, if we become stronger and teach the next generation how to be strong, this congregation is more likely to become stronger and be an even better outlet for Yahweh's truth to the world. I can guarantee you that if the world around us continues going the way that it has in my lifetime, the future generations are going to have to deal with a lot more than what we did and what we're dealing with now. So they're going to have to be strong. Before I close, I'd like to read something from the Pew Research Center. In 2014, they did a study on the decline of religion between 2007 and 2014. That's only 7 years. And it's really no surprise that there was a noticeable decline in people who claimed to have a religious affiliation. I was going to put the chart up, but the text was way too small for you to appreciate it. So I'm going to read some comments that they have about what's driving religious change. And they showed that for those who are not religious, who don't have a religious affiliation, they not only prayed less, but fewer of them had a belief in an almighty being. So this is a quote from the Pew Research Center. To understand what is driving religious change, it is important to recognize trends in American society as a whole, not just how individuals change over their lifetimes. And they say, of course, some individuals grow more religious over times, while others grow less religious. And while those without a religious affiliation may be growing, it's in part because some people in their 40s, 50s, and 60s had weak ties to religion, and they're just dropping that off as they get older, okay? But one of the major factors behind the growth of these people that don't have a religious affiliation and the declines in traditional forms of religious observance appears to be generational. Older generations of American adults who were overwhelmingly Christian by affiliation and comparatively devout in belief and behavior are gradually passing away. They are being replaced by a new generation of young people who are, on the whole, less inclined to identify with any branch of Christianity and more religiously unaffiliated than their older cohorts ever were, even when they were young. So they're saying some of these people had really strong religious convictions when they were young, and these people are dying off now. The next generations replacing them don't have this religious affiliation. And so far, members of the millennial generation do not seem to be growing more religiously observant as they get older. Generally, we see a trend where people get older, they become more religious. This is not the trend anymore. The oldest millennials, now in their late 20s and early 30s, are gradually less observant than they were 7 years ago. And if these trends continue, American society is likely to grow less religious, even if those who are adults today maintain their current levels of religious commitment. So what they're saying, even if everything right now as it is stayed the same and we all had the same religious commitment, the next generation, they're going to be driving those numbers down. There's going to be more people in our society who do not affiliate with any religion. So as a whole, and that's the end of their quote. So they recognize that there's a change going on. So as a whole, society is failing to pass on these religious values to the next generation. And if the current trends continue, each generation will continue to abandon their religious faith more and more. You know, if we're going to preserve our faith and strengthen the next generation, we're really going to be swimming against the current. You know, coming to worship service every week is a good start on the work that we have ahead of us. But remember that every Sabbath we spend here, we're out in the world for 6 days. So we need to supplement what we learn here throughout the week, and we need to involve the next generation. I'd like to close with a passage from Psalms. Psalms chapter 78. Give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. We will not hide from them our children, showing to the generation to come the praises of Yahweh and his strength and his wonderful works that he has done. Verse 5. For he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers that they should make them known to their children, that the generation to come might know them. Even the children which should be born, who should arise and declare them to their children, that they might set their hope in Elohim and not forget the works of El, but keep his commandments. Just like the psalmist says, don't we want the next generation to know Yahweh and set their hope in him? Thanks for your attention. May Yahweh bless you as you strengthen yourself for what's coming. Hallelujah.